And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast, where I was not even planning to do a second podcast this week, but the Warriors are here for 4 days in New York City, getting both of their visits over with. And that means the sonorous tones of my friend Nick Friedell are in the five boroughs, and so we had to do a podcast. Nick Friedell, how you doing?
I'm great, buddy. All these years that we've been doing this and I've been showing up on a podcast randomly, we've never been in the same room.
It's exciting.
So I am really looking forward to being able to sit here with you and go through the wonderful world of the Warriors.
I was going to say, I bet you are great. I don't know anyone has ever gotten such a clear environmental promotion from the Bulls suck beat, which you've been on since they started sucking, to the freaking Warriors with Kevin Durant. DeMarcus Cousins hasn't even played yet. Like, I just don't even know. I mean, both cities are great. I'm not going to put one city above the other. I would slightly prefer San Francisco, but I love Chicago. I think Chicago is an underrated city. Are you like a kid in a candy store? Do you miss the Bulls?
No.
You're going to have a reunion soon. The Warriors go to Chicago after they get through curb stomping the Nets and the Knicks this week.
Look, this is Shangri-La. Being out with the Warriors and seeing the machine that is that organization every day, the team is unbelievable. They're good to deal with in large part because they've won, but they've got great guys within the organization from the top down. So it's been awesome. Every day I kind of have to pinch myself that I'm in California. I'm covering the best basketball team on the planet, and I'm comparing it to what I've been through. I mean, Zach, Steve Kerr is an unbelievable coach, but for what we do in trying to talk and create stories and draw interest, Steve sits there after practices, and I've never seen this in 10 years covering the league. He just sits and talks just about whatever issue, doesn't have to do anything with basketball. I mean, Tibbs used to look at the Bulls PR people and be like, get them the out of here. He wanted no part of seeing anybody. He wanted to do his responsibilities and get them over with.
My favorite thing about Minnesota Tibbs, and there has just been, it's just been such a fun era in Minnesota with Tibbs, has been the consternation among some people on the business side of the organization that he's not enthusiastic about doing like promotional events and stuff for season ticket holders and like all the, like the videos that they show in the arena. Really? You guys are surprised? Did you make one phone call? What? Did you do one background check? The dude just wants to watch film and coach. That's it. Like all this other nonsense he doesn't care about.
And eat his steaks. You know? I mean, Zach, I've heard the same stuff from Minneapolis, and all I keep thinking is, did you guys talk to anybody within the Advocate Center, the Bulls practice facility, where all the offices are? Did you talk to anybody in Chicago? Because it's the same idea. Well, Tibbs' door is closed, and he doesn't want to deal with the people on the business side. Yeah.
That's who you hired. Really? Anyway, so you are, it's a cliche comparison for everyone between the ages of 35 and 45, which I fall right in the sweet spot. You are Tim Robbins crawling through the sewer, the sewage pipe, and raising your arms to the sky. That's you.
I made it.
We gotta get a Photoshop of that. Except you laughing. Instead of how he looks up at the sky, you have such a great laugh. Just your Friedell's laugh. Anyway. So I have never, one of the great shames of my last 8 or 9 years doing this job is I missed the Curry 54-point game at Madison Square Garden in 2013 or 14, whenever that was. I don't know. Along before, when the Warriors were kind of becoming, like, not quite the Warriors, but you could tell something special was happening. I don't know why I missed that game. I had some sort of personal commitment, and I vowed if I'm here and they're here, I'm never missing a game that they play here again. So I don't think – he's obviously had some great games in the finals, some 8 or 9 threes games. I don't think I've seen one of the 3 or 4, like, legend performances in person. You just got to see the 51? What did he have? 50 – whatever.
51.
51.
51 and 3 quarters.
Yeah. You just got to see that. And I saw the first half of that game, and then I had to be able to do other things. I mean, it's the logo shot. Even the first one where he, like, on TV, he kind of, like, vanishes. All of a sudden, he's moving forward, and then he vanishes backwards like some sort of video game boss that can, like, apparate from one spot to the other. And then he's gone. You can't see him. He's behind Markieff Morris. All of a sudden, the ball's in the air. I've never been to in Oracle for that. What's that like? That's your first one.
Incredible. And as a public service announcement to any basketball fan, with this being the last year in Oracle after 47 years in Oakland, if you have the ability to do so, get over there. Because when Steph gets hot in Oracle, it's unlike anything I've ever seen. There is a roar. And early on, that first quarter, he was just knocking down shot after shot after shot. And you're going, okay, well, it's probably one of those nights. And then every time he comes down the floor, there's this rise in anticipation in the crowd. And everybody's going, oh, is he going to do it again? And then he knocks down another one. And the bench is going crazy. And everybody's smiling and jumping around. It is an unbelievable experience as a basketball fan to watch that guy in that environment knock down shot after shot. And when he puts them up, Zach, he knows they're going in. And that's pretty cool.
He knows they're he knows they're online.
Yeah.
Like you can tell. And like, so those are just clean. Like they're just going in clean. They're not even catching rim from 35 feet out. He knows they're online. He knows when he feels it, and there just isn't anything like it. There's just no viewing experience in basketball that's even close to that.
He was saying that Durant and a couple of his teammates are on the sideline at the end of the first quarter, and they're screaming at him, don't pass it, don't pass it, because just like the fans, the players are standing there on the floor, and they're going, I can't believe what we're watching right now. Just put up another shot. He said he was taking dare shots. I mean, it was so much fun, and that is what is cool to me about this group this year, is they really seem to be enjoying the chemistry in coming together more so maybe than they did last season. And part of that is because Steph is just on a tear and admitted as much after the game. He wants to win that third MVP.
I think, I wrote before the season that I think it's unfair that Curry and Durant kind of get mutually disqualified because they play on the same team, because they both can't be quote unquote as valuable as the singular star on a worse team. But I mean, we'll see how many wins they finish with. But I mean, this was like when some people didn't vote for LeBron when he was on the Heat because he had Wade and Bosh, and they voted for other people on teams that won 15 fewer games or something. And I would say, well, those 15 games. Wins 50-65 are each one of those is exponentially harder than the other one to get. Those are the hardest wins to get. And if you are 50% of the reason why your team is getting to those win totals or 73 or whatever it ends up being, like I think that that's part of being valuable. That's part of that shows your value. And I said this before the season. I said it on when I was on Mike Greenberg's pod. I said on in a column I wrote. I just keep seeing LeBron, Durant 1-2. And then like, oh yeah, Curry, Harden, Kawhi, AD. To me, Curry is right there with KD, and those guys are closer to LeBron. Now, AD is getting into this group. If AD keeps doing this, then we just have, and Giannis, then we just have this top five that's ridiculous. But Curry is closer to LeBron than he is to the jumble of guys that people put at 4, 5, and 7. I mean, they're all great, but Curry is, there just isn't anything like this that's ever played the sport.
Durant made a very interesting point the other night, Zach. He said that the MVP award to him has become like the most up-and-coming player award in the NBA because he feels like guys like LeBron, guys like himself, guys like Steph, they get discounted because the league is looking for that next great player and that next great narrative. He said that when Steph goes out and knocks down three-pointers from all over the place and has 51 and three quarters, then you have to remind people, hey, I'm still here and I can still do this. And the fact that Curry knew already who had won three MVPs in the upper echelon of player that has been able to do that in his career, he looks like a guy who wants to send a message every night. And when you're playing with this team in this group right now, he's going to be able to do that time and time again this season.
The fascinating thing will be if they win it again this year. I love how it's October 26th. Like if the Warriors win it again this year, that's where we are in basketball. Toronto's awesome. Boston is going through some stuff. Like it's just, Houston's 1-3 or whatever they are, and like maybe trading 19 first round picks for Jimmy Butler. We'll see. If they win 4 out of 5 and he doesn't win any finals MVP, that would be just unprecedented. I'm not rooting either way for him to win or not win. It's just, it would be, if it went Iguodala, Durant, question mark, not Curry, it could be, Clay could have 4 40-point games or something, and he would. I don't know. It would just be unprecedented for a player who's going to go down as a top 15 player, top 20 player. Top 20 is too low for Steph. I just think it's going to be higher than that. Who's won, let's say, 4 championships or more to not have a finals MVP. That's never happened. That'd be like Larry Bird not having a finals MVP or Magic Johnson not having a finals MVP.
If it's me and I'm running to Vegas and those lines come down, and we're skipping steps here in the words of my pal Tibbs, but everything holds to form. I'm running to Vegas and I'm throwing money down on Steph to win the finals MVP. Because all these guys know. They all say, the titles are what's important and we care about the team. And that is true. But they know what the individual awards mean as well. And I really believe that Steph this season wants to remind everybody, hey, I'm still here and I can still dominate night after night after night. And assuming they get all the way there and stay healthy and keep rolling, I would think that once the brightest of lights go on, he'll be ready to roll.
Oh, for sure. So we're in New York. There's a stupid billboard up, I guess, about KD. The Warriors got here last night and immediately practiced, which is apparently a thing that Steve Kerr does when they come west to east. And the practice did not get out until you told me like 10:15, 10:30. So obviously everyone's there to ask KD about the Knicks. You described the scene for me earlier. Please describe the scene of because it's amazing to me. I kept waiting for the quote. I kept waiting for the, he closed the door, he opened the door, and he kind of just like, I barely saw a quote, and then, it's MSG, it's like a playground. Like, describe the scene.
Yeah, he handled it really well, as far as I was concerned, because I'm looking at some of the New York media that's there, and I'm thinking, all right, how is Durant going to handle and navigate the questions that are going to come his way? And Steve Kerr set the tone, Zach, because he comes out and somebody goes, do you, Kevin, talk about free agency this summer? And he goes, not at all. And then he says, well, did you see the billboard? And Kerr goes, well, Raymond Ritter, the PR czar of the Warriors, he told me it was Clarence Weatherspoon. So Knicks number 35, it was Clarence Weatherspoon.
Sure.
So he made a joke of it, and everybody just kept rolling on. Durant gets out there, and first of all, a lot of people thought Durant had left the gym. So the New York media members going, are you kidding me? We sat here for 2.5 hours and Durant left.
But families are furious.
Oh, they're going nuts. And that was the latest media availability I've ever seen in the league, at least for a practice.
Yeah, they told me they were going to do that. So we're going to practice when we land. And I said, you know what? I'm going to skip that one. You guys are here for 4 days. We'll see you at the game.
Let me tell you, you didn't miss much, which ties into, okay, so Durant appears. They find Durant and he comes out and he's being asked about what he thinks of the billboard. And he's like, to be honest, I really don't care. That stuff doesn't impress me. And he's asked about the state of the Knicks and he's like, I don't pay attention really to that. The main quote.
No, first of all, yes, he does.
Well, exactly. I mean, he's just trying to downplay everything he says.
And by that, I mean, Durant pays attention to every team. He's a huge fan of the NBA. He knows exactly what the state of the Knicks is.
But he's saying speculation is part of the game. I thought that was interesting in that he's saying, you guys have a job to do, and as players, whether we pay attention or not, and you know he does, but whether you pay attention or not, it's just part of something that you deal with as a superstar in the NBA. But the biggest pull quote of the whole session is he's talking about how the Garden is just a cool playground with walls. And every player, Zach, loves playing at the Garden. It is.
I know, no matter how long the Knicks suck, it doesn't matter.
When guys show up on that stage, a different light turns on for them. And we've seen it for years and years and years. Durant is no different. Steph Curry is no different. But as far as the, I'm coming to New York, Porzingis is going to be great coming off that injury, those quotes, they never materialize. And I'd say this, I haven't been around the Warriors that long this season, but I've talked to Durant about the topic of free agency. I've talked to Draymond and Steve Kerr. I've listened to a lot of people in the organization. I don't believe, as we sit here at the end of October, that Kevin Durant knows where he's going to go. I don't think he's made any kind of decision. I think he's waiting to see how it all plays out. And we're going to find out how they do this season, if they can win another title. But I don't believe in my heart of hearts that right now, today, he's decided, yes, I'm going to stay in Golden State, or nope, I'm going to New York, I'm going to go play for the Knicks. I don't think his mind is made up.
Do you think maybe he's waiting to see how Cristiano Felicio develops in Chicago?
Oh. Oh, my God. See, we're on this high, high. We're talking about Durant and Curry.
Sorry.
And then you hit me with the Big Chris reference.
I do think the Porzingis thing is so interesting. I've had this conversation with 30 people around the league just randomly in the last 3-4 months. Like, the question I asked them is, do you think, not just Kevin Durant, but any star player, do you think they need to see Porzingis for 20 or 25 games this year? Or do you think that even if the Knicks sat him the whole year, that they would just assume, as long as they got good dribbles of intel about what he's doing behind closed doors, you just assume that it's the same Kristaps Porzingis as before the ACL and will develop further? And I've actually been surprised. I think the answers are 50-50 and maybe 40-60 on the side of he doesn't need to play, it doesn't matter. I thought it was going to be 80-20, like, yeah, KD or Kyrie or whoever is going to need to see him play a significant chunk of games, and maybe I'm wrong.
Of course, you'd like to see him play, but I'm with the
it doesn't matter.
I'm with the majority in this sense that it really doesn't matter, because if you trust that you're getting those little packets of information that are saying, hey, he looks fine in behind closed doors, he looks the same, then fine. The only issue is, for me, I watched this with Derrick Rose, and I watched the Bulls try to recruit free agents, and Derrick's going to be fine, no problem, he's the same player, and you never know. You never know once you have that first major knee injury what happens after that. Maybe Porzingis comes back and he's unbelievable again. You don't know. But if you're Durant or any other free agent, absolutely, you're going to have a question as to whether that superstar player can maintain it over time. But I don't think you have to see him before. I think you just rely on the fact that everybody is giving him good signs and the clearance is there, and you just hope for the best if and when you decide to team up with him.
So the Warriors are now up to, and I stress up to, 21st tied for 20th in three-point rate. 29.9% of their shots have been threes. That's tied for 20th. That was like 28th before they played the Suns, which is, you know, like a nice little free win, and then the Wizards the other night. It's actually been interesting to watch, because in 15-16, which is their sort of, you know, that's their 73-win season, they were somewhere in the like low 30s, like 32%, and that ranked, where are they? Oh, excuse me, in 15-16, they were number one. And number one was 33.6%. So 4 percentage points above where they are now was number one. And they just kind of held steady there. Now they've trickled down a tiny bit in the last 2 years, but they've essentially held steady, and the whole league around them has just gone crazy. And it's just been interesting to see their place within that evolution with the two greatest shooters ever and Kevin Durant. The league has, passed them by is the wrong way to phrase it, is at least launched more threes than them. How concerned were they really after three games when everyone was like, oh, you're not shooting threes? No one but Steph can shoot threes.
None.
No, just zero. Like, we don't
zero
care.
Zero concern. And Kerr and Curry and Clay, and they're all asked the same question. Hey, you know, the pace is way up in the league and everybody's scoring, and you guys aren't shooting as many threes and you're not making as many threes as you used to. And Steve just sits up there and is like, yeah. A lot of teams are trying to copy us, and they see the success that we've had. But you laid it out. They've got the two greatest shooters of all time, plus Kevin Durant.
Who's top 10. I mean, Kevin Durant has a 50-40-90 season on record already.
Steve Kerr, after that game in Utah last week in Salt Lake, he said, Durant is the most gifted scorer in the game. And I thought that was interesting, because Steph Curry's sitting there on that team, and then Steph goes out and drops all those points in three quarters the other night, and you go, it's just such an embarrassment of riches. And it's not something that we haven't been through in the last couple of years, because that narrative is always the same. I'm telling you, having watched it firsthand throughout this season, it's unfair. You look on the floor and there is Steph Curry, and he can get it going at any point. And Klay Thompson, the first few games, hasn't even been very good.
And I said it the other day, you know, it's coming. The Avalanche,
absolutely.
Maybe it'll come tonight. You know,
absolutely.
The 37-point quarter against the Kings a few years ago is coming. And
Steve Kerr said this prior to that Wizards game. He said, we know it's coming with Klay. It's only a matter of time. And Klay, Durant, and Steph have a neon green light to shoot whenever they desire. And when you watch them, Zach, and you see them running up and down the floor, I mean, again, as a basketball fan, to be around this team and to watch the machinations of the group over time, it is unbelievable, because you just don't realize, unless you're watching them day in, day out, just how talented they are. I mean, I was talking about, oh, man, I feel so lucky to be in this position. I walk into the practice facility in Oakland, and there are Durant and Curry having the shooting contest every day. And I'm going, this is like covering an all-star game.
Yeah.
This is where they're at. This group is that talented. And I think, to bring it a kind of full circle, it's why when I've talked to Steph and Draymond and KD, everybody's trying to stay in the moment and focus on this year, because they know just how talented they are. And this is without Boogie Cousins. I mean, he's going to come back at some point, but this is without him even in the conversation. This group knows how unbelievably special they are right now. And they know that it could end. Durant could leave at the end of the season. But they're trying to enjoy what they've got in the moment. And that part of it is pretty cool when you look around and you see exactly who's on the floor playing together with each other.
The thing that sort of changed their team, but one of the main and sometimes under-discussed things that has happened to them and explains their plateau in threes is that Draymond's three-pointer fell apart. 15-16, the year they won 73, he shot 39% on three attempts a game. The year before, 34% on four attempts a game. So around a little bit below league average. Last 3 years, 30%, 30%, 22% so far this year. His shoulder got screwed up last year. I don't know if there are any lingering effects on that. He's only taking 1.8 threes a game so far. Nobody guards him. Nobody's guarded him for a long time. And there was a moment where it looked like he would turn into a serviceable three-point, not stretch four, but a big man who would shoot threes
who
at a decent,
who would
let it fly five times a game, maybe eventually six times a game. And you took, what did I say? 4.2, 3.2, 3.5, 3.7, attempts per game. And this is kind of what makes Damian Jones so interesting to me, because they've never had a pick and roll dive guy like this. People will say JaVale, and I get that, but they didn't trust JaVale. And JaVale is as athletic as he was in his prime. He's just a little creaky still. He's not that north-south fast like this. If you put Steph and Damian Jones in a pick and roll with Durant, Klay, and Draymond around them, you should be able to generate threes at will. And you can see them playing with it already, where they'll run that and then they know they're going to help off Draymond, and Draymond will flash up to the elbow, catch the ball, and then the help will come from somewhere. They call it shorting the pick and roll, and he'll kick it to Durant on the other side. That's a vehicle to me to generate easy threes. It's just Steve doesn't want to play 1-5 pick and roll basketball, never has.
On top of everything else, Damian Jones is going to be the league leader in lob dunks.
I think he's shooting 85% from the floor.
I mean, I feel like every time I turn around, here's Damian Jones with another lob, and he's just throwing them down all over the place. The looks that they are going to create, both for Jones and for the rest of the group off of some of those sets, again, it's an embarrassment of riches. It really, really is. And this is what Steve Kerr keeps saying. They're four or five games into the season, they still haven't even figured out all the ways in which it can all click together. And that's what's it's borderline comical, because we're talking about a kid in Damian Jones who's getting a look with playing with all these future Hall of Famers. Zach, in a few months, you know who's taking Damian Jones' minutes in his spot? Cousins. And Cousins seems so kind of joyful when you see him in practice. He's shooting against Clay. It's like he sees what his role is going to be within this group. And he feels like the rest of the people in the organization do is if they handle business, they'll win a title again. And then he'll go back on free agency and he'll get his money somewhere and all is well. But that is the craziest part to your point. They're setting up all these different looks in the offense. And a few months from now, the guy who is going to be playing with the Draymonds and Stephs and Clays and Durants is Cousins of all people. It's incredible.
They're going to mow through these bad Eastern Conference teams, and then we get the Pelicans on Halloween, which will be fun. It's always fun to watch the Warriors negotiate Anthony Davis. Now, KD has given them yet another guy they can throw on him, but he's too tall for Draymond. As good as Draymond is, he's hurt Draymond before, and they've guarded him with centers before. JaVale guarded him a fair bit in the playoffs last year. That's going to be a fun game. Is that in Golden State or is that New Orleans?
It's in Oakland.
That's in Oakland. You ready for that? It's going to be a fun game.
Those games in the playoff series were pretty fun, at least a few of them. I'm curious to see how my man Nico Mirotic plays in that environment because he's been kicking everybody's butt the first week or so here. But in that series a few months ago in the playoffs, he was really a non-factor in most of those games. It's like they just stuck Iguodala on him for a lot of the time and they said, take him out. And
I remember that. You're right. Yeah, they threw Iguodala in on him.
And he wasn't able to do much. So I like New Orleans. Anthony Davis was my pick for MVP prior to the season. But if you're looking at any team and trying to see, you know, it's the litmus test game. How do they fare against the best? What I'm telling you is the Warriors are just so much better than everybody else. They are so much better. That game in Denver that they lost. Steve Kerr after the game said that it was some of the worst basketball he'd seen as the coach of that team in 4 years in the second and third quarters. And he's like, then we hit the switch, we started playing, and they were right there in the end. Damian Jones got blocked by Hernan Gomez. If they play at the level at which they're capable of, and granted, we're 2 weeks in the regular season, but if they play at that level, nobody is going to touch them. It's not going to happen this year if they stay healthy. They are that much more talented and more secure in themselves than any team I have ever seen in my life.
Yeah, I think the teams that are best equipped to challenge them are both in the East. And one of them, Boston, is clearly a little further behind than they wanted to be at this time and than all of us thought they would be. They need to get their third quarter against Oklahoma City. I don't know if you saw any of that game. It was the first time they kind of looked like the Celtics all year. Even in the first game, that was kind of a ragged game against Philly. The third quarter, they kind of came alive, but they have a long way to go. The Thunder, by the way, 0-4. I think Russ was 0 for the world in the fourth quarter last night. It was ugly, ugly game. We underestimate, I underestimated how damaging it would be. They just don't have enough good NBA. They just don't have enough average NBA players. And because they have two great ones in Russ and PG and one very good one in Steven Adams, I am guilty of underestimating the impact of just everyone else around them being bad. And like, I don't think Jeremy Grant's bad. He's just a tricky fit because he doesn't shoot and doesn't want to shoot. Patrick Patterson left his shot in Toronto and never traveled south with him. They don't trust Abrinas, although he hit some big shots last night. They're 0-4 is, you know, it's not great.
They're just not good enough. That's the issue. When you look at that roster, they don't have the depth that everybody thought would be there, to your point, around two superstar players. That group, there was so much hype surrounding them after the big PG announcement, and you watched.
There was literal hype. They threw a house party.
Yeah. I mean,
actual house party.
Actual hype.
When I think of that party, you know what I think of? Because didn't go. It was a very exclusive invite list. I think of the house party in old school.
Yes.
Where Will Ferrell comes, like Snoop is randomly there and Will Ferrell comes out naked and that's the party I think of.
Get your hat.
Yeah. Get your green hat.
All right. Let's roll. If you're the Thunder, I don't know what you would do because you're not trading Russ and you're certainly not trading Paul George after just re-signing him, but I don't believe that even if they turn it around that they're going to get to some point where you go, you know, they've got an actual chance here. I don't think that roster in totality is nearly as good as a lot of people thought it was going to be, and I think that is going to continue to show itself throughout the course of the regular season.
I was worried. Like, I wrote, keep an eye on the Thunder. They're vulnerable right now, but I did not expect them to look this bad. They look bad. They'll get it together eventually. This team has been kind of an up and down team ever since KD left. But they'll get it together eventually. We have breaking news on a team that I know you wanted to talk about today. Are you prepared for Detroit Pistons breaking news? I know you're very excited.
I've got all the stock. I bought all that Pistons stock.
You are going to be selling when they're 500 again in like 3 weeks.
Oh no.
No, it's Luke Kennard. That's breaking news. Luke Kennard will be reevaluated in 2 weeks, with an AC joint sprain in his right shoulder. Nick Friedell. Does Luke Kennard's injury, is this ruined your day?
No. Is it
sapped your optimism about the 4-0 undefeated Detroit Pistons?
Mr. Lowe, so long as Blake Griffin was not in that breaking news with some kind
Let me just check.
With some kind of ailment. Yeah, do a double check.
No, it's a 2-sentence press release. It's all about Luke Kennard.
Okay.
That's it.
Everybody in Detroit, take a deep breath. I was around this team a fair amount last season.
Yeah, they were part of the Bulls suck beat. The Midwestern Bulls suck beat.
The Bulls suck beat added the Pistons right around when Blake got traded. And they never found themselves, understand. Reggie Jackson was hurt throughout the last couple months of the season. But I always believed they could be much better than what they had shown to that point. And part of that was, I was there the day Blake got dealt. Zach, he was so pissed off that he got dealt, and in the manner in which he got dealt. I remember he told me, I found out on Twitter, was that the whole truth? Who knows? But he was pissed. And I think he wanted so badly to go in and do well, and they didn't do well. And Stan gets canned, and he's gone. Well, now all of a sudden you have Dwayne Casey, and he's putting in his system, and you have a group of guys that seemingly the whole basketball world has written off as just whatever, not good enough. I think this.
I don't think that. I saw Blake say that the other day. Like every time I read everywhere that I'm bad, I don't know that anyone wrote that. Blake's a really good player. That contract is problematic for obvious reasons. That I understand that he. If you say that, he thinks, well, that means I'm bad. I get that. That would suck if someone said that about one of us. Oh, it's a bad contract Friedell has already. He's clogging the cap.
Zach LaVine tweeting that at me.
Oh, that was awesome. That's right. Wait, what was that? You tweeted like the Bulls don't want to pay him more than 16 or 15, and
said,
he tweeted like the crying emoji or something?
From the Bulls' perspective, 4 for 60 has always felt like the comfort zone for him. And if I'm the Bulls, and this was the night of free agency, if I'm the Bulls, I'm not going too far past 4 for 60 because I'm not sure at this point that he's worth the investment. And an hour later, he's tweeting the crying face laughing emoji at me.
Have you seen him since then?
I went up and shook his hand in Vegas.
Okay.
After he signed the deal, I said, congratulations on your deal. And I'll go shake his hand when the Bulls see
what
the Warriors.
What did he say?
He just said, thanks. And we kept moving on. But I feel like this was, Zach, this is like my party gift to guard Pax. Like, I pissed off Zach LaVine so much to the point where he finally kind of is bringing his offensive game together. My whole issue with the contract was it was never on his offense. It was, what's he going to do defensively?
Well, look, I have said many times that for as much as Tibbs is going to get beat up for Butler when they finally trade Butler, if they do, or if they're really going to do this thing where everyone hates each other and they're just going to play all year, he's going to get beat up. And I've said before that there's a chance, and I think it's a 50-50 chance, maybe even more, that the only asset that matters from that trade is Markkanen.
Yes.
And Zach LaVine, if he keeps playing like this, is going to make me eat those words, because that contract is a fat contract. It's 18.5 a year or something like that. He is still a disaster defensively, but he does try hard. He's always, I don't think effort has ever been a problem for him on defense. He just doesn't understand what's happening.
It just doesn't click.
Yeah. But like, he had that, late deflection and steal against Charlotte, setting up his game winning free throws the other night. That's a great play. But like, I don't care how bad you suck at defense. If you shoot what is he shooting? 60%? If you score 30 a game on 60% shooting and 40 plus from three and like 80 at the rim, you can be really shitty on defense and still approach the value of an $18.5 million contract. Now, is he going to continue shooting like this? No. But, I mean, you can go back all the way to when I wrote a piece about Zach LaVine moving into the starting lineup in place of Kevin Martin in Minnesota when Flip Saunders, rest in peace, was still alive, and I talked to him about it. I said then, and I said in a preview this year, or maybe it was in the Bulls column over the summer, I'm not ready. Like, the consensus on Zach LaVine even then 3 years ago was, oh, he's Jamal Crawford 2.0, he's J.R. Smith 2.0, he needs to come off the bench. And I wrote over and over again, the guy is too good of a shooter for me to consign him to that role. He can play off the ball. He's a 40% three-point shooter on ridiculous, like, not even step-back attempts, like step sideways and dribble-back attempts. If he keeps doing this, he's a monstrously valuable offensive player. The defense is never going to be good. But if he's actually this good on offense, that contract is not going to be bad, and he is – well, it's not going to be that bad. You know what? I don't even think it'll be bad, and he's going to be, if not a big asset, an asset, and I will eat my words on that.
You and I both. The key for Zach early on in the season also, he's getting to the line. So
nine
often,
times a game, triple his average.
So often in the last few seasons, he would kind of wait for some jumper, some tough jumper that either would or wouldn't go down, but I mean, I would be happy to say I was wrong. I mean, it's okay to be wrong.
No, it's not. We all should be fired if you're wrong.
But I mean, it's like after every Bulls game, I get the people like, I can't believe you left. You just ditched us. And then I get like the Zach LaVine truthers that are like, you must repent. You must repent for your take because Zach LaVine is incredible and he's the best player that's ever lived. I mean, look, he keeps putting up 25-30 a night. I will happily go on to Twitter and tell Zach himself, hey, I wouldn't have paid you that deal, but you have earned every penny, and you've made me eat my words. I just don't know if he can maintain this and still try to attempt to be a better defender over time.
Now, even if he never is a better, even if he's never a better defender, I mean, it's not like James Harden has been a better defender. James Harden's one skill on defense is switching on to big guys and to poke and like holding his own. That's an important skill. But other than that, he sort of just stands around and does nothing. You can exceed $20 million a year just on one way, if that one way is offense. And the one thing missing for LaVine that's going to make, if he never gets better on defense, the one thing that will determine whether he actually is a plus value on that contract is not the shooting percentages, because those will be what they are. They'll be good. It's his playmaking, because that's why Harden can be a one-way player, is because he is a genius passer who makes everyone around him better. And Zach LaVine is not a genius passer, not a playmaker. He's mediocre at it. And, you know, obviously he had that infamous stint. I'm looking at his assists. He's averaging 3 assists a game, which is exactly what he's averaged his entire career. He had that stint as a point guard in Minnesota that was a disaster.
No, not good.
And that will be, like, that is the next step for him. If he can, he's not going to become Chris Paul. If he can have an assist rate equivalent to a really good passing big man, like a Blake Griffin or Jokic or a Gasol, now the conversation changes. I didn't mean to get you talking about the Bulls. We're supposed to be talking about Luke Kennard. How many wins is the Luke Kennard injury going to cost the Pistons?
Hey, well, look, tying it all back together, anytime you hear an athlete, a coach, an executive in the league say, oh, I don't pay attention to that stuff. I don't pay attention to what's written or what's said. That is complete bullshit.
It's like when Jimmy Butler says it's not about the money.
Exactly. Another one of my favorite topics, Jimmy and all that is that mess in Minnesota. But everybody pays attention. Their families pay attention. It's part of the deal. And if you're Blake Griffin and the Pistons, you've read that people don't think your team's very good. And Blake has read that you're not going to live up to the contract. He sees it. He hears it. Zach LaVine very clearly saw me say, if it's me and I'm the Bulls, I'm not going too much higher than $60 million because he hasn't proven it. It doesn't take much for highly talented pro athletes to kick it up to some next level if they believe that they want to show and prove somebody wrong. And that is what's happened, I think, early on in this season in both of these cases with the Pistons and certainly with LaVine. But as one addendum with the Bulls, Mr. Lowe, you're out Markkanen, you're out Dunn, you're out Portis, Denzel Valentine hasn't played.
I literally
oh my Lord.
Forgot about Denzel Valentine's existence until someone tweeted his name on that list of injured Bulls.
Was it a Michigan State highlight?
No, I think it was KC or someone on the beat tweeted, like, just hear all the Bulls' injuries. Oh my God, Denzel Valentine. I've watched 3 Bulls games this year. I literally did not register that he didn't play. And he has the funkiest floater in the entire league. I love Denzel Valentine's little weirdo shot put floater, and I just forgot. So the Pistons, I want to do 2 more minutes on the Pistons. Blake Griffin is 15 of 23 from deep. That's obviously, you know, not going to last. To me, the most important stat of the whole year for the Pistons is this. Reggie Jackson, 7.5 3-point attempts per game, shooting 40%. That is more than double his career average in attempts, in 3-point attempts. Let's see. 54% of his shots have been threes. That is up from 29 the year before, 27, 26, 19. He's just never shot threes like this, and it's a recognition that by both him and Dwayne Casey that, look, we have Blake on our team. He's going to be our de facto point guard. Andre got better at facilitating the offense last year. We have to give him some room to do that, even with Blake here. And, you know, we're going to run Reggie Bullock off a lot of J.J. Redick kind of screens, and we're going to play Reggie and Ish together because our wings are all kind of unproven and shaky. And so Reggie has to play off the ball, and he's accepted that. Sure, he's not thrilled about it because I know Reggie Jackson has told me on record, I would like to run a pick and roll every single time we have the ball. He told me that 2 years ago in Detroit. But if he's going to play this role, he's got to shoot a lot of threes, and he's got to make them at a high clip, and that has happened so far. If that lasts, if that's real, Detroit becomes an interesting team, and I picked Detroit to make the playoffs. They were on my list of 8 playoff teams. I still think they're going to be around 40, low 40s wins, even with this 4-0 start, but Reggie Jackson's been interesting so far.
And it's another reminder of what could have happened last season. If he's on the floor and he gives some balance to trying to figure out how to put Blake and Andre Drummond in the right situation, Zach, who knows what happens? I mean, maybe Stan still is there because they go to the playoffs and he's not getting completely crushed for that deal to acquire Griffin. I would have been really curious to see, especially with the end of that schedule and how many bad teams they had. They just couldn't put it together in enough time. If Reggie Jackson doesn't miss that huge chunk of time, what the Pistons would have become. But in the moment, absolutely. If he fits that role, that gives the group even more space, and they're going to continue to learn what Dwayne wants them to do. And I like their chances to maintain kind of the new path that they're on. And absolutely, they stay healthy. I think they're going to the playoffs.
Well, I just would like to point out, they've played 3 games at home.
And a very easy schedule.
Their schedule has been home against Brooklyn, at the Bulls, home against Philly without Ben Simmons, home against Cleveland without Kevin Love, and boy, does Cleveland stink. So I'm not going to go bananas over Detroit
playoff
being 4-0.
Playoff team.
Well, in the East, that's a thinnest kid at fat camp status. They play Boston. Their next two games are against Boston. They have a home and home against Boston. That'll be interesting. Then they come here on Halloween. Halloween question. Well, you have a game on Halloween, so you're not going to be home. Would you have candy at home you're in Oakland?
I live
right?
in a hotel right now, so I am not the right person.
I still am scarred by Windhorse telling me last year that he actively shuts the lights off his house. And does not have candy.
I would think B would have the jack-o'-lantern orange bowl filled with candy and be like dressed up as like Count Dracula.
Nope.
I would think he'd be all in onto everything that is Halloween in Omaha.
I got a costume this year. I'm going to dress up with my daughter. I decided.
What are you?
Well, look, I can't, many years ago when I was younger and single, Halloween was a big deal.
Oh, yes.
in New York City.
When you're 35 and single, Halloween's still a big deal.
When you're 41 and a exhausted parent, it's not that exciting anymore.
Here's some Kit Kats, everybody.
No, but I'm sure when they come to my house, they damn well better be dressed up. Because if you try and come with like some lame-ass costume or you're not putting any effort into it, I'm at least going to ask you some questions about why you failed as a child on Halloween before you get the Kit Kat. I have a Harry Potter costume left over from 2007 that worked out well for me in 2007. So I had to get a couple of accessories that have been lost to
time
shenanigans over the years. So I'm going
to
dress up as Harry Potter and we're going to go trick or treating. Let's do 5 minutes on Jimmy Butler because I can't resist. So Woj reports last night the Rockets are prepared to offer four. Oh, that's Tibbs. You're gearing up with your Tibbs impression.
It's like getting the engine running. Like, these mother, beep, they don't know what they're talking about. We can still do work in the West. Let's give it time.
Four first round picks for Jimmy Butler. The Rockets are prepared to offer.
Yeah, like number 29 for 3 years.
So we don't know the details. I think it's absolutely fascinating. I have no doubt that Houston is among the two or three smartest teams at valuing their draft picks. So if they think it's worth four first round picks to go get Jimmy Butler, I trust that they've done the math, and it's worth it. However, I will say this. I am going to be blown away to the point that I think there's almost no chance that Houston would trade four unprotected first round picks for Jimmy Butler. No chance. The last one would be in 2025. Now, it's very complicated because they can't protect them in a way that the protection extends for 2 and 3 years because then it violates the – you can only trade picks that are 7 years out. So if you start cascading these picks so that they go to 2028, 2029, that's illegal. You can't do that. They all have to convey, okay? So I don't care how good you think the Rockets are now. Trading an unprotected 2023 and unprotected 2025 is a massive risk that the Brooklyn Nets just lived, and it destroyed their entire franchise
for like a decade,
for a long time. And yes, James Harden is way better than Deron Williams in 2013 and Brook Lopez in 2013. He's also 29, the exact age that D. Will was in 2013. Jimmy Butler is 29. Like, in 2025, those dudes are going to be 36 years old. You cannot trade an unprotected 2025 pick. You just can't do it. And so I think the offer is probably unprotected this year, unprotected 2021, some protection 2023, some protection 2025, where it's like lottery protected or top eight protected. And if Houston falls into that range, then it immediately that year becomes 2 second round picks or something like that. Because otherwise it's a huge risk that I would not laugh at. If I were Minnesota, if those are actually unprotected, that's too risky, I bet, for Daryl Morey.
Yeah, but do you think Tibbs cares about the 2025 pick he may or may not get? He will be long gone out of there at that point.
This is why your coach should not be your general manager.
You are going to get no argument from me there, my friend. The issue with, as far as that particular deal goes, look, I love Jimmy. I've watched him his whole career. I don't think Jimmy, even as great as he has become right now, if you make that deal, if you're Houston, gets you to where you need to be. Because then all of a sudden, Chris Paul is another year older next season. You got to find a way to sign Jimmy to massive money, and that is your team. I mean, this is your group. I don't think it's good enough on top of everything else. And with the Tibbs minutes that Jimmy has put into his body over time, and he's one of the most well-conditioned players in the league. When you have played all those minutes for all those years as a team looking to acquire Jimmy, that is what would be terrifying to me, is how much wear and tear is on those knees and how much can you invest in a guy when he has given everything he's got to get to this point. How many more years at an elite level does he have with where he's at right now? If it's me and you're Houston looking to make this move with the type of future picks or whatever they would land on, I wouldn't do it.
See, I think Houston would say, we think we could trade Jimmy Butler if we re-signed him. We think he's young enough still at 29 that if we give him a 4-year max or a 5-year max, and also note they did not give Chris Paul the 5-year max. I think he has a player option, so maybe that's no, they gave him a 3+1. So they gave him a 3
so
plus
4.
One. 4.
He's taking that.
He's taking the player option. $44.2 million. They didn't give him 5. And they will play the income tax game with these guys too. Just as the Heat will with Jimmy Butler. I think they would say if we got him on a 4-year deal somehow, we would trade him and we'll just they're like in figure it out later mode. Because to me, I disagree with you. I think if
they can do it.
If you have Paul, I'm just talking about this year.
Right.
If you have Paul, Harden, Butler, Capella, Gordon, Tucker is your top six, that's the best you can do. That's the best you can do to try to compete with the Warriors. Now, will they have both Gordon and Tucker? Or will Minnesota, if Tibbs actually picks up the phone and has a conversation, will Minnesota insist that one of those two be in the deal? That hurts you a little bit. Houston has been very reluctant to put Tucker into these offers because they value his defensive versatility so much. And if you have Butler, Harden, and Paul, there is an argument to be made that some of what Gordon brings is now expendable, although his shooting is really important for them. But if you somehow found a way to use those 4 first-round picks as the carrot that allows you to keep both Gordon and Tucker on top of those 3 stars in Capella, I just don't know how you can do better. I don't know how you can do better building a team to play the Warriors. I just think you can look at that team and say, we took them to 7 last year and we got Jimmy Butler. Like, we just can't do any better than this.
And there's the difference. As a fan, I respect the hell out of Daryl Morey if he's going to make that move and push all the chips in and go to what we were saying. I'm all in. I'm getting Jimmy. We don't know if he's going to stay here long term, but we're going for it right now. I appreciate that. I'm just telling you, in my opinion, I don't think anybody this season is touching the Warriors. Not touching them to the point where you think, all right, they could really go down. And even last season, Paul gets injured. Iguodala was hurt in game 5. If everybody stays healthy last season, I think Golden State gets through just fine too. I know there are people that disagree. Okay, well, Golden State still won last year and they're still on track to win this year. From a broader standpoint, Zach, what gets me is the Tibbs GM coach whole conundrum. If you're Tibbs, and Jimmy made it clear in his interview with Rachel, he let Tibbs know many times. Jimmy last season knew that he was just kind of done with this whole thing. Like, he knew that Towns and Wiggins were not good enough. He knew that he couldn't stay in Minnesota long term because if he wanted to win and he wanted to get paid, it wasn't going to happen at a high level there as far as the winning is concerned. I think he realized early on, that's why he kept saying what he did in the media, Towns and Wiggins. Wiggins to me, is not that good. Towns is an incredible offensive player, but he gets sidetracked in his own mind a lot of times. We've seen that to start this season.
Well, that Toronto game the other night.
Oh, my gosh.
I didn't see that game. I just saw the highlight where Jim Peterson said, you know, it's one of those games Cat doesn't want to play
today. He doesn't want to play.
And that is like, whoo.
If you're a player of Jimmy's caliber at age 29 and you realize that you've got this one big contract left and this one chance to either win or get paid all the money, and you're on a team with 2 guys that you don't believe in, and you knew, this was not new. I mean, this is why I blame Tibbs for this whole issue, because Jimmy knew long term he wasn't going to be there, and Tibbs should have sat down at the beginning of this summer. And maybe they did. I mean, if Jimmy is to be believed with exactly what he told Rachel, but if you're Tom, you have to, for the health of your organization long term, you have to say, okay, he's going. We're not going to play it out in the public because this has been a total disaster. I mean, this is a soap opera every day. But make the deal happen before it gets to this point. And now it's at this point, and the leverage they may have had, it's just not there the same way. So, look, as much as I love Tibbs and Jimmy, this is on Tibbs wearing that extra hat of being the czar in the basketball ops guy. This is where it burned him, because he couldn't face the reality that his main man, who he dealt for didn't want to be there anymore.
Could you dress up as Tibbs for Halloween? I'm trying to think what that. I don't think you really could. It's just
like a white shirt, yeah, a tie, and a blazer.
What's your all-time best Halloween costume?
I was Fred Flintstone in fifth grade. And
that's it, all downhill costume wise since fifth grade.
Yeah, there wasn't much depth to my Halloween costumes. Right. Fred Flintstone being in that getup got me a date with one of the prettiest girls in sixth grade though. So
in sixth grade,
at fifth or sixth.
Well, I was gonna say you went up a grade in elementary school. That's if you elementary. If you go up a grade,
no.
When you're in high school, if you're a sophomore at the senior prom, you've done good work.
You've done something. Yeah, I don't think it went that deep, but Fred Flintstone, I do remember it got me a date, and I was like, you know what, yabba dabba do.
There you go.
This is what it's come to on Halloween.
All right. Well, we've got a Warriors-Knicks game tonight. I'm sure it'll be really competitive. And then we have the Warriors are here all weekend. Nick Friedel, thank you for making time. I know it was last minute, but I couldn't resist having you on. I always love talking ball. And you can read all Nick's stuff on ESPN.com about the Warriors. And he is a contributor regularly to the Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective, our revamped Hoop Collective pod. And, you know, I love Windy. He comes on here a lot. So, you can listen and read Nick at all the places I just said. Nick, man, I'll see you in whatever 3 hours at Madison Square Garden, the world's most famous arena.
It's a party, baby. I appreciate you having me on. It was great to be in here with you.
Thank you. The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.